hear three tones ring out. They have a special meaning, so hear what it's all about.
It's the Sunday Night Show with your hosts, John Gassman, Larry Gassman, and Walden Hughes. Here are John, Larry, and Walden.
And we are back. It is Sunday, November the 16th, year 2014.
Oh, we're barely goodness. Back. Just barely still, back.
We're here. And we have a special guest on the line. And Ryan Ellis, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You have a brand new book out, and you want to give the title and where people can find it.
Sure. let me get it here. The full title, The Texas Rangers, Two Decades on Radio, Film, Television, and Stage. And pardon my voice, I hope it holds out here. And it's available on the Bear Manor site. It's probably the easiest place. I believe it's on Amazon as well, but I know some people have found it easiest to order, I believe, from the publisher, Bear Manor.
Bear Manor, and that always helps them out and help the authors out.
Yes.
You have a Facebook or a website, too, about the topic yet, Ryan? Or
Yes. I have my own website, ryanellett.com. That's ryanellett.com. And the front page, I'll have the info on the book, and then other pages you can see my last book, and then I've got a chapter in French and Siegel's Western book that came out this spring, so little info on that.
Baker, on the same topic?
Well, yeah, Western's book, on the radio.
What you covered on this one, right?
Yeah, that chapter focused specifically on their series, Life on the Red Horse Ranch. This book, of course, looks at their career in its entirety beyond just that one series.
Got it.
I know you said that the book was already pre-written to some degree, never published earlier. How did you get interested in beginning to finish that product?
Well, it's an interesting story. I got into it's kind of by chance that I became interested in these guys. I've been researching. KNBC is a local Kansas City station that produced a decent amount of original material in the 1930s, which just, you know, by luck, I suppose, has been preserved. I mean, a lot of documentation from the station's era has been preserved in a couple university archives, and so I've been researching that for the past few years, and in the course of that, discovered massive amounts of information on this band, the Texas Rangers, which was kind of a house band. I don't know, there's probably a technical term for it, but they were entirely a product of Arthur Church, who owned the station. They were all staff musicians, and he kind of created this band. But anyway, so there was all this information, and as I perused it and wrote a couple articles on it, I just decided, you know, I think there's a book here, and a guy at bwestern.com, I believe, put me in touch with Kevin Coffey, who's the co-author on this, and a very, very well-read and excellent scholar, more on country music history, which is nothing I'm real familiar with. So we kind of put our brains together, and he'd been researching the Rangers for quite some time, and together we hashed out this new book.
Isn't that the same station that Jimmy Allen came from? Didn't Jimmy Allen come from that radio station in Kansas City?
I don't believe so. That's not a name. He may have appeared.
Yeah, they're eventually to Jimmy Allen. I seem to remember it jumping out of a station out of Kansas City, Missouri, but That could be wrong.
Yeah, they had quite a stable of Western artists come out of there. The Rangers are probably some of the biggest ones. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was kind of one of their niches here in the local area with their Western shows.
When did they actually get started? And you want to talk about the group a little bit?
Sure. The group, as best we could determine, the earliest reference we found to them was 1932. And that was just a local radio show, just simply called the Texas Rangers, and pretty much just some music and patter, as best we can tell. This is all based on scripts. There's no recordings that we know of from that era. And so 32, and the last reference that I have found to them is mid-50s. And, of course, by then, the membership had been completely turned over. There was no one from the original lineup who was still with them. And I'm not real sure what happened to them after the mid-50s. They just kind of disappear. The station was sold, so I don't know if the band was split up or if they just split themselves up. You know, I'm not quite sure exactly when they ended. I think they just kind of, as I said in the book, they just kind of faded away and were forgotten.
How would you describe the music? Is it Western music or is it country music? I mean, well, music aficionado always think those are two separate categories.
It's hard to explain. And I've, of course, not listened to their entire output, which was quite vast. A little bit of everything. They did a lot of course, traditional hymns, a lot of the classic Western Plains-type tunes. But then, you know, in the war, a couple of the members, Gomer Cool and Bob Crawford, were some of their primary songwriters. I mean, they wrote some patriotic tunes, and I can't think of their bigger hit off the top of my head. But they had some swing, probably some more jazz-influenced tunes. None of the performers were actually country musicians. Kevin Coffey, who's more of the musicologist part of our team, emphasized that, you know, when Arthur Church put them together as a Western band, a couple of them, especially Gomer Cool on the fiddle, they really hit the practice studio to hone their Western and their country tunes, because that's not what they were really trained in. Gomer was actually classically trained with the Kansas City Conservatory, and the others were more traditional big band musicians and such, and so it was country was not their, or Western, you know, kind of whatever it was called, hillbilly, was not their native sound, so they really had to forge it over the years.
Would the show ever syndicated or went national from Kansas City?
From Kansas City, yes. Pretty early on, actually. I want to say 33, but it might have been 34. I'd have to check back. They were, for chunks of time, they were carried over the CBS. KMBC was a CBS outlet, one of the earliest CBS outlets. They were carried over the Western Loop, so they would be picked up along the West Coast out there. I don't know that they, early on anyway, were carried east of Kansas City, but I have found a few references in West Coast newspapers to them. And again, that would just go for a few months at a time. They never picked up a sponsor, so I assume they were dropped then after a few months for maybe a sponsored show or another program was given a chance. But they had a few runs over the CBS network. And then Life on Red Horse Ranch was a transcribed series that they produced, recorded, I believe, in the spring, early spring of 35, and that was distributed then to a number of stations. Didn't ever quite take off like Church and the band hoped, of course, but that was sponsored initially by Saucony Oil, which has, of course, the flying red horse logo, which is kind of where they renamed the series from its original title. But and so that was from the Kansas City era. That was the extent of any radio work beyond just the city. A few stints on CBS, and then their Life on Red Horse Ranch transcription series.
And what were the names of some of the other series that they did later on?
Let's see. In 39, they moved out to California. And the story of that is a bit unclear. I don't know if that was something the band members entirely wanted to do, or if Church pretty much said, this is something you guys are doing if you're going to stay employed. You know, I don't know the story behind that. So they moved out to L.A. in 1939, and they made a big push into film, and they got parts in some Gene Autry films, and who's the other guy here? I'm flipping through the pages. Johnny Mack Brown, they were in a few of his films. And they were in a radio series late summer, early fall of 39 with Mack Brown called Under Western Skies, and that was a CBS program. Pretty much all their material appeared over CBS over the years. And again, this was a short-lived series, probably 13 episodes. Unfortunately, I don't know of any recordings that survive of that one. So that was 39. They did do the first few episodes of... what's the show I'm thinking of? Shoot, I'm going to have to flip through the book here. It was a late 40s Western radio show, Hawk Larrabee. That was later called Hawk Durango.
Hawk Durango, yeah. That's right. I'd forgotten that they did that, but they're on most of the shows.
Just the first few episodes were kind of the background vocal. I don't think there were any musicians. I think it was just a vocal quartet called on for that. And there's a little chunk in the book on that. They were pretty much fired from that. I want to say they wanted a little more publicity or a little more mention of their name in return for continuing on the show. And, well, CBS wasn't interested in that, so they let them go rather unglamorously. And I forget the band that took over for them.
But that show was sustaining, too, I think, wasn't it? So CBS wasn't going to give them a lot more money.
It's not a show that ran, I don't believe, for more than a couple years anyway. Right. And they were just associated with the first few episodes there. So that might be the most famous show with which they are connected. There's a nice chunk of the book. They were almost the band that was on the Dr. Pepper. Oh, what is that name of that show? Like, caught me off guard. Anyway, they didn't. The book is full of almost, and almost successes, and they just end up getting bypassed, and that's just the way showbiz works. But there was a long-running Western show sponsored by Dr. Pepper, a musical show, that they almost got signed to, and then that just didn't quite work out.
So if we want to hear them, they are on some radio programs. What medium can we hear them on the most?
Probably your best chance to really get a feel for their work is the Red Horse Ranch series, which of the 65 episodes that were produced, 64 still exist and are circulating, and it's really just fortuitous and chance that a few years ago when I was starting to study these guys, Randy Riddle, who's out in, I think he's North Carolina, he digs up all kinds of new material.
I've known him for a long, long, long time.
Came across the run of this show. Like, he might have picked it up at an auction or wherever he manages to get his stuff. And kind of via a third person, I heard, oh, he discovered this new Western series and didn't mean much to anyone else. But of course, I knew exactly what it was because I had just been researching it and had no idea that there might be recordings around. So, but over the course of 65 episodes, they're 15 minutes. Each one contains 3 to 4 songs, and then there's a storyline that runs through it, which is pretty flimsy, as you can imagine. But so over those 65 episodes, at 3 or 4 songs a piece, you get a pretty good feel for their repertoire and their range of musical skill. You also get a feel for their acting skill, which was not their forte. They were definitely not actors. But that's probably the best, and you can find that online. Probably archive.org would have.
I have them all. I mean, I've got all the ones that exist, but I haven't had a chance to go through them much, and we won't do it tonight, but we will do it in the upcoming weeks or so, and we'll play some.
What about your research, Ryan? Where did you go? The local depository that covers this this period of Kansas City radio? How do you do it?
University of Missouri in Kansas City has a nice selection of Arthur B. Church / KMBC materials. And then the biggest chunk is actually up in Iowa at Iowa State University. And I suspect they ended up there because Church attended that school this was back in the teens, almost 100 years ago. He spent like one semester there. So I suspect somehow that's how all this documentation ended up in their special collections. So I've done, I've several different summers and spring breaks when I'm off work. I have traveled up there to make copies and do research. And I've reported out on some other series that they produced. A couple of their other well-known figures out of KMBC were Ted Malone, who was kind of a poetry reading.
Yeah, very famous.
A job type guy. He came out of KMBC. Of course, Goodman Ace started there.
Right.
And who's the soap opera guy? Studebaker.
Studebaker,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All started there. But UMKC and then Iowa State are kind of the primary sources for this book. And actually, it's interesting. One of the Gomer Cool was still alive, if you can imagine that, when I started this research. He just died a couple of years ago, just before the book came out. I was disappointed. But he was 102, 103. He was the original fiddler for this band. So I got to, via email and through his son, I got to interview him a little bit. He provided some fun little anecdotes and such.
Wow. So he lived a long time.
Yeah, and he ended up doing some writing for CBS. He quit the band just before the war, and he ended up becoming, I assume, probably a staff writer for the network, or the station anyway, and you'll see his credits on a few different series, Rocky Jordan, and I think actually he scripted a couple episodes of the Hawk Durango series that the band was in later on. But and then I don't know the exact date, late 40s, early 50s, he quit show biz and he opened a candy store there somewhere in California, and that's what they did. He never really returned to radio or performing.
What about any other members of the band? What did they wind up doing?
None of them. Trying to think, a lot of them just kind of disappear as far as we know. Probably the saddest, one of them, I'm going to get them, try not to get them mixed up. There were so many people over the years. Actually, later in the back of the book, we kind of have a overview of every known member and what happened to them. Let me find that here. I know one of them committed suicide, sadly. A lot of them were just professional musicians, and they ended up moving on to other endeavors.
Right.
A couple of them, one of them went with, which one was it here? They were on Gene Autry's Melody Ranch. They started on that show when it started. They did the first half season. And then they were, maybe that's the show I'm thinking of, they wanted a little more credit, and Autry was not interested in them getting any more air credit, so they were let go. Paul Sells, who was one of their band members, quit the band soon after that, and he ended up playing with Autry and doing work with Autry for quite some time after that. Paul Sells might be one of the more accomplished members of that band.
So would they have played on the audition show, Melody Ranch, the one in January 31 in 1939?
Yeah, because there is a musical group behind Gene Autry on that show.
I'm wondering that might be them.
Very likely. I know I have some documentation as early as there was a broadcast in December that was kind of a preview of the show.
That's the one we have.
Okay. Now I'm trying to remember if they did that, because another band stood in for them for one of those early programs. I want to say it was from the East Coast, and they couldn't get out there, but they were assured they would be brought back once the series actually started. So I'm not, I don't want to, I'd have to see what the date is on the one you have.
Yeah, December 31, 1939 was the show of the last 15 minutes of Gateway to Hollywood, when that was show was fading out, and they wanted to bring in Melody Ranch, and at the one that Spurvac wound up with Gail Storm. Mm-hmm. Gail Storm had the disc.
I'll have to look for that. I know when I was looking through a lot of the Melody Ranch shows, there weren't many, if any, from that early that spring of what would be 1940, I guess. I'm not sure any of those were still.
Yeah, I got quite a few, though.
But that they were on all but one or two of the episodes, and they were not on those couple because they did not record them in California. They recorded them elsewhere, and they either did not pay for the band to go or just didn't want to mess with having the band travel or something like that.
Were you able to find some photographs for the book? When people buy the book or order the book to Bear Man Media, you want to talk about the layout? I mean, how many chapters and what? Do you break it down into sections? How did you lay out the book?
The total book is just under 350 pages, split into, look at the index or the contents here, I want to say about 10 chapters. I did get a nice selection of photographs from both Gomer Cool's son and then Bob Crawford, who was kind of the leader, de facto leader of the band and singer through the 30s. His son, one of his sons, lives just north of Kansas City, and so I was able to sit down with him and interview him, and he gave me some great picture copies. So it's full of a lot of photos, and then of course I've picked up various KNBC and Texas Rangers related photos just off eBay and such. They're part of my own collection. Tex Owens, who is mainly a solo singer, but he was connected with the Rangers for some time. So there's information on him in there. So yeah, you've got 10 chapters of basically the history of the band, and that's kind of the first 250 pages or so. More detail than you could, plenty of detail if you're a fan of the Rangers. If you're not, you can certainly skim through and skip maybe some of the more detailed discussions that wouldn't be as interesting. But I made an effort to weave their story into the story of radio as it was developing. So, and especially once they move to LA, you'll start seeing the names of other entertainers, both from film and radio, that you'll surely recognize. And so that's a fun part of the story. Then at the end, of course, there's an episode guide for Red Horse Ranch, and then more appendices information on some of their other series, their filmography. They ended up being in tons of films, probably a dozen, just over a dozen. I guess that's not a ton. Kind of those B-rate Western films, one of which I've seen. I assume a few more may still be existing. They're just kind of always that background band, you know, the lead singer, kind of the nameless folks on the horses in the background singing with their guitars. So that's kind of the layout. Plenty
okay.
of pictures, like I said.
Are you going to be working on any other books relating to Kansas City Radio, or what's your future?
I have a couple other manuscripts in various stages of work, nothing anywhere near complete. One of them is related to, this Kansas City work, and I've got a couple other projects that I've kicked around that hopefully eventually will get some traction and get going on that. I think, Kansas City was obviously not Chicago, not L.A., not New York, but I think I think there's a story here with KMBC, just kind of seeing what these smaller stations were putting out on their own. It's interesting. We don't tend to get a whole lot of that side of the radio story. We just see what was coming out from the big boys and the big cities, and so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got two or three other books kind of percolating that I hope someday will eventually find their way to print.
Mm. Good.
So once again, Ron, what's the title of the book?
Okay, the title is The Texas Rangers, Two Decades on Radio, Film, Television, and Stage. And again, the co-author was Kevin Coffey. He's got a book or two on country music, but it's by Bear Manor and just published this summer. And I believe if you go on their website, you can get it soft cover. But they also do offer now, probably for a lot of their books, you can order a hard cover edition. And, of course, it's also electronic version. So any way you want it. Ben Omar can meet your needs.
It's a good book. I read quite a bit of it, actually. Ben was good enough. He always sends us books. Uh-huh. Especially before we interview the authors, and I got a chance to read it a little while ago before the SpiritVac convention took up a lot of time other than work.
Sure.
And enjoyed it a lot because it was an aspect of radio I knew very little about.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to read, and I hope it does well for you.
Good. I had fun reading it. Enjoyed meeting some of these family members, like I said, getting in touch with Gomer Cool. There's just something thrilling, and you guys probably, having just completed SpiritVac convention, just that thrill of there's still those few connections to this lost era, and it's thrilling to latch onto one of those connections and realize
yeah.
someone who is there is just amazing.
It's still thrilling. It was wonderful 30 years ago when we had so many more of them, but we still have a few, and. So it's always fun to go back and be a part of that. It'll be a little different probably in another 10 to 15 years when there really won't be anybody left, but maybe grandsons or sons and or daughters of some of these people. So you take advantage of it while you can.
Absolutely. And frankly, that makes me think, talking to the sons of these performers, you realize how little they know about the radio work that their, in this case, fathers did. And so even talking to that generation so often, they don't know. They've enjoyed reading this book because they get to know about what their parents did. They don't really know that aspect of their parents. And so it's been rewarding. They've been thrilled with that. But
well, Ryan, thanks for coming on with us. We enjoyed it thoroughly, and good luck with the book.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Take care.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.